Okay, I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We have a quorum present. Representative Knuth, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Thoroughly, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes of the the last meeting.
You reviewed everything but the date. Okay. Motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. By way of announcements, the bill by Representative Dabney, House File 2279, we're going to drop that from the agenda this evening. What I'd like to do, I might bounce around a little bit tonight. Representative Fritz has a bill, House File 1032, that's number 9 on the agenda. Representative Fritz. And the trip sent on here?
No.
Okay.
I am.
We'll have to move the.
You're kind of a vital person.
Representative Murphy is here. Okay. The chair moves the State Government Finance Division report for House File 1032, the Second Committee Engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The chair moves that Senate File 727, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So, Representative Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What House File 1032 does, it's a bill that transfers funds, money from administration, $134,000 a year, to the Department of Human Services for the purpose of going to the group of folks from the disabled community to self-advocate for themselves. And I believe we accepted the Senate language, and that's the way I want it.
Okay. And you've had a gentleman that's been waiting since this afternoon. Do you want to introduce him and then that's been waiting for this bill?
Yes, I do. This is the one of the advocates, Rick. If you want to come up and say, he has been here since 7:30 this morning advocating for us and help the folks who...
Yeah, and that's why we thought at the minimum you ought to be able to say hello after that long a day.
Just tell you, just 1 minute to give you an explanation of what his day is like.
Welcome. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Rick Tardness with Advocating Change Together, and worked on this bill over a number of years and have had it funded last year and want to continue to gain funds to create the statewide self-advocacy network for persons with developmental disabilities. I work at Advocating Change Together, and there are 5 districts in the state that we have half funded, and this money, if we transfer this money to Health and Human Services, we hope to find a federal match to some degree with some of the funds that are going to go to DHS through Medicaid FSP. So we have to get that here and fund the metro area, which is the only area that is not funded at this time.
Well, thank you, and I chose your dedication when you were here at 7:30 this morning, so 13-hour day. any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, President.
You're welcome. And we'll go now to House File 1351, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler, we need you to move the State Government Finance Report.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move the State Government Division Report for House File 1351, the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Winkler.
And Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 1331, the third engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I understand you have an amendment, Representative Winkler.
And Mr. Chair, I have the DE1 amendment that I'd like to move.
Okay, and Ms. Arnfield reminds me that on the amendment we need to make the correction that it's not House File 1351, that it's Senate File 1331.
That's
the bill that's been before. Okay, and so you're moving the amendment, and it's a fairly extensive one. Maybe you could recap what the amendment is doing.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, the Senate File 1331 is the absentee ballot reform bill that was put forward by the Secretary of State's office. The DE1 amendment adds a number of additional provisions, including an early voting bill that was authored by Representative Morgan, an election administration reform bill authored by Representative Hilty, a online voter registration and student registration reform bill authored by Representative Kahn, and a change for township elections bill authored by Representative Poppy. And so it makes this is, in a sense, an omnibus elections reform bill. The Senate passed the bill, which is actually much longer, and we will be hopefully sending these two bills to meet up in conference and trying to find agreement with the governor's office and report back an election bill that will be signed.
Okay. Any discussion then on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, it's an election reform bill. Could you tell me, and just quick, I think I've seen most of these bills. Is there anything in here that gives us language that would require or provide for the cleanup and verification of voter registration lists?
Yes. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I guess I didn't hear your question. You said the cleanup and verification of voter what?
Registration list. And I thought I heard Representative Kahn say yes.
Representative Kahn, whoever wants to handle it.
Mr. Chair, the absentee ballot bill was mine, and everything else has belonged to others. So if Representative Kahn has an answer to that, would be best if he gave.
Well,
hey, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, the part that I have is the student online registration list. And that deals with the problem that the lists are sent to the various precincts, but instead it will all be done instead of sending the registration instead of the school sending its list to the precinct, which is they'll send them to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State will precinctize them, so to speak, and they'll be right ones. So all the people that belong in the precinct will be sent to that precinct list. The list of the people who belong there will be sent there.
But, Mr. Chair, and whether it's Representative Kahn or Representative Winkler or somebody else who has a provision in it, when we talk about election reform, is there anything in this DE1 amendment that deals with how we update and clean existing voter registration lists across the state?
Representative Simon has a bill that I think is next on the agenda that deals primarily with that issue.
I'll look forward to seeing it. So I guess the answer on this one is no.
Not in, Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, there may be people here and there, but that's not the primary purpose of this bill.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Winkler or somebody, I'm not sure if it's yours or Representative Hans, is there anything in this bill that provides for more consistent assessment of absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, actually the original Senate File 1331 dealt with that, and it does so in a number of ways, including creation of a absentee ballot board, so that there's one centralized place in either a city or in a county where those votes are counted, and there's some additional clarification in a number of areas for absentee ballots, clarifying what grounds there are for rejecting them, requiring some additional information, numerical identifiers for individuals trying to vote by absentee, and a number of other things.
Representative Brown, Representative Pittman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question I have for you in regards to this is that on these absentee ballot boards, I was noting here, I think in the past we have always had party balance, and especially where you're handling ballots and reviewing ballots. It appears as though in this case here you have removed all of the party balance language, exempted them from all party balance. So we'd have no assurance here of who is reviewing those ballots in such a way that folks would feel comfortable that there's been that check and balance that comes from a good Democrat sitting next to a good Republican, and together they review these things, but it appears as though that's been stricken.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, that's not actually quite right. There's an option to use county or city staff to do the work, but it's not required. In fact, if they use election judges to do the ballot board work, then there has to be party balance. So you're not getting rid of it. You're just creating an option to use county or city staff instead of volunteer election judges to do the counting.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe there, I'm trying to find an example for you. Line 1030, it says the board may consist of staff trained as election judges, in which case the board is exempt relating to party balance. And it's also exempt from the duties otherwise required to be performed by ballot board members or election judges of two different major political parties.
Mr. Chair, Representative, correct. It creates the option. They may do that and use staff rather than election judges.
Mr. Chairman, I think that puts the county staff in a very uncomfortable position. And this is one of those things that, having experienced a few recounts in the past, almost invariably, the first question that is asked, what was that political party background? And it's a protection to the election judges. It's a protection to the workers, because as soon as you do have that presence there, it usually calms the waters, because folks say, okay, we know that we had that kind of opportunity. It's probably one of the best places where you have two different political parties working together for a common goal of the integrity in regard to looking at those, and it serves everybody very, very well. So I just really express a real concern about that exemption.
Representative Rodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Winkler. I'm looking at page 16, and it says, notwithstanding any other provisions of this section, the counting of an absentee ballot of a deceased voter does not invalidate the election. Can you just tell me what that refers to?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rodge would actually refer to the assistance of the Secretary of State, Bob.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Frazier from the Office of the Secretary of State. Representative Broad, that is actually current law, and it's being moved from one section of law to another.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Brian. Frazier, why is it being moved? What is the rationale? I'm just trying to understand it better.
The rationale is that where the absentee ballots are being processed is being changed from the precinct to the absentee ballot board, and so it's being moved to the section where it's talking about the board processing the ballots from where it talks about the ballots being processed in the precinct.
Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Frazier, is there any other place in law where an improper ballot where we state that an improper ballot doesn't invalidate an election?
Ms. Frazier.
Improperly counted. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Frazier. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I'm not sure off the top of my head. Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, if you can get that for me, I think that would be interesting, whether we're just putting this in law for this one group of non-applicable votes or if it's related to others. But Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, one thing that I wanted to ask you, During this last election, there was some issue related to folks with visa expiration dates on their driver's license being considered as part of our voting list. And I know the Secretary of State's office took a look at some of those things, and I'm trying to understand, as all these reform bills go forward, whether those folks have been either determined to be not on the list anymore, what your office has or what the Secretary of State's office has done with that group of non-legal voters that were on the list. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, prior to the election, we ran the statewide voter registration list against the list of people with visas and identified some voters and contacted the county auditors and the county attorneys for them to investigate and see whether this was accurate. Representative Simon is carrying a bill that I believe is next on the agenda that would give us the authority to run that check regularly.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, can you tell me what follow-up you've done with the county auditors or county attorneys to determine whether these folks are still on our voter list or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, not at this time. I don't have that information.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, that would be helpful for me as we assess these reform bills going forward. And then, Mr. Chairman, one last question for Ms. Frazier. The Secretary of State's office has in my view, has the ability to make those determinations, and I'm trying to find out if you can tell me where in law you're not allowed to make those determinations. The Department of Public Safety shares with the Secretary of State's office every 2 weeks, is my understanding, the list of folks with visa expiration dates. So where in law does it state that you're not able to do the cross-tabbing or cross-checking with the voter rolls?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, it doesn't say anywhere in law that we're not allowed to. It also doesn't say anywhere in law that we are allowed to. And more importantly, it doesn't say that we're allowed to do anything with that data were we to find a problem. So what we're looking for is the authority to do the checks, to notify the county auditors, to notify the county attorney so that these records can be flagged and investigations can be done and potentially charges can be brought.
And Mr. Chair, to be clear, that's not a provision in this bill.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, if you're looking for the authority to do those checks, yet in this past election you already took the authority and did what I believe you should have done, which is move forward and have those folks referred to the county attorneys, I don't see what change is being made that you can't already do in law. And so I guess I'll look forward to Representative Simon's bill and we can have that conversation. But if you could find out for me what steps the county attorneys have taken related to the provisions that you referred to them, that would be very helpful. Thanks.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. We now have the motion that Senate File 1331, the third engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one question for, I'm not even sure who, I apologize. I'm trying to find out what provisions in this, maybe this delete all, were never heard in the House Government Operations Committee, or if they all were heard, that's great. I'm just kind of curious which ones were never heard.
Representative, Chair, Representative Broad, I believe they were all heard and passed.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, in this DE1 amendment, is there any provision for photo ID?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, there isn't, and I'm afraid if it were, the bill wouldn't pass the committee.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of Senate File 1331, the third engrossment, the third engrossment as amended to be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. I'll file 1053, Representative Simon. And Representative Simon, you want to move the report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the State Government Finance Division report for House File 1053, the first committee in growth.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Simon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move House File 1053, the first committee in growth, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, motion is before us on the bill. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know it's a full agenda. I'll try to be quick. This is the bill that deals more extensively with the voter roll, the 21st century voter registration proposal. This did pass out of Representative Pawlowski's committee. There are no amendments here. I won't go too deeply into the policy. Suffice it to say, it does two major things. First, it allows enables the Secretary of State's office to more fully utilize certain databases, state and federal, that will allow it to essentially review, cleanse, scrutinize the voter rolls, and that includes everything from death registries to who felons may be, to a whole variety of databases that give them that authorization. Then secondly, it changes the presumption on our motor voter law so that now it's an opt-out instead of an opt-in. That's the bill. In terms of the cost, which is why it's in front of the committee, there is a cost. You'll see it should be in your packets. If it isn't, it's a fiscal note of about just north of $300,000, but all of that money, 100%, is paid for by federal HABA funds, Help America Vote Act funds. So there's no cost to the state.
Yeah, and there is a fiscal note in the packets. Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon. How about the cost to the county auditors? You've got this Social Security Administration provision reports of deceased residents, and you give some directions to the county auditors. What was the cost to the counties?
Representative Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Emmer. There's no net cost to the counties. As a matter of fact, there's a net cost reduction to the counties. I have a handout here. I'm not sure if it made it into the packets or not. No, it did not, but it did in the first committee. And if you name a county for me, I've got it here. I can tell you not necessarily how much money it will save, but I can tell you how many people had to register on election day who the county folks would not have had to register had this been in place. In other words, because they had valid state driver's licenses or state IDs, they would have been presumptively registered already, and there wouldn't have had to be the hiring of the election judges and other personnel at the county level. So this is a net gain and a net favor for counties.
Chair, so there's photo ID in this bill?
Mr. Chair and Representative Member, only to the extent that it references a state driver's license or a state ID card, and that it's registration for either one of those that would change the provision from opt-in to opt-out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, under report change of names, lines 2.18, 2.19, you're having the county auditor, I believe, mail a notice of registration to the voter. Representative Simon, what happens if that notice of registration is returned?
Mr. Chair and Representative Member, in terms of the mechanics of that, I'd like to defer to Ms. Fraser of the Secretary of State's office.
Fraser, did you hear the question?
Fraser. And Mr. Chair, what I'm looking for is I want to know how you verify that, in fact, this mailed voter notice of registration actually got to the registered voter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, all of these mailings are non-forwardable mailings. So if the voter does not live at the address that we have, the mailing would be returned. And then depending upon what indication there is from the post office, a variety of things would be done with it based upon laws passed last year. If there's an updated address in Minnesota, the address would be updated and a new card would be sent to the voter's new address. If there's an address outside of Minnesota, the address would be updated and the voter would be sent a notice saying, it looks like you're no longer eligible to vote in Minnesota. If you are, please notify us. Otherwise, you'll be removed from the voter rolls. And if there's no address, then the voter's name would be challenged on the voter list.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Fraser, again, my question was, how do you verify that the registered voter actually received the notice? mean, if it gets mailed, it doesn't necessarily get returned. Somebody might just pick it up in their mail, and all the other mail they get, they might never return it. They might toss it. How do you verify that, in fact, a registered voter received this notice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we rely on the Postal Service.
Okay, any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one other question I have is in regards to the loop of the whole process, and that is, on Election Day, you still do have people who would be registering to vote on Election Day? Yes. Correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And on Election Day, when people register to vote, the practice has been, and the question is, I'm assuming this would not change, that those people who register to vote on Election Day would then have to be entered into the state system. And my question is, have those names from the November 4th election of last year, 2008, are they currently entered into the state system, and at what date were they all entered?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, they have all been entered, and we received the final notice that they were entered on April 1st. Okay.
Mr. Chairman? Thank you. And after that, my understanding is that postcards are sent out to those people. And since it has been over a month, how many of those postcards have you received back?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the postcards are returned to the county, so the Secretary of State's office has not received any of that.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Fraser, they come back to the county. Is that public data? Are those postcards that come back to the county, is that then public data that is available?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I would be assuming that if somebody wanted to ask for copies of those things, that that would be their right to have copies of those or to go look at them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Fraser, I think somebody better get their things together, because I have a constituent that has asked for that data, asked your office, Secretary of State office, for that data, and there's been a bouncing ball between, we don't have it at the Secretary of State office, go to the county. The county says we can't do it, we do the data. And there's been a real runaround with that whole thing, and this is in writing. So I don't know if it really works all so well as it's being talked about right now. It certainly isn't being very satisfying to this constituent. And so I'm asking on the record, I'm expecting then that the counties will do that, and that their letters and statements that say no, that the Secretary of State office, if informed of that, would inform the counties that they are to give that information to the constituents or those folks who do ask for it. Your office would advocate then, as you've just said, you would inform the counties that they're required to do that.
Ms. Fraser. Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, we don't provide legal guidance to the counties. They rely upon their county attorneys. And I think most counties think it's easier to extract information from the statewide voter registration system than to find a variety of postcards, but the postcards are public data.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not asking for legal advice. I'm just asking for what the Secretary of State just said on the record, the office said on the record, and if you will follow that up and support that if there are any issues locally.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I believe that when asked, we have said that we believe that the postcards are public data.
And available. All right. I will leave it at that, Mr. Chairman, and then I'll inform these people that, having asked these questions on the record, that they should proceed to go through the process again and see if they can get better results.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and either Representative Simon or Ms. Fraser. Several sections of the bill talk about, they put the sentence in if available driver's license or state identification card number. What's the definition of if available? If I don't want to show it to you, does that mean it's not available? It just seems like a really loose and inconsistent word, and I'm wondering why that needs to be in there, why we can't strike if available.
I'll take a crack at that one, Mr. Chair. I think it means if exists. I'd be very surprised if anyone would interpret that to mean that it would just be up to the person, not the producer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why? I that's not how I would interpret it. I would interpret it. I don't have it on me.
Mr. Chair, where that exists in this bill, it's talking about data coming from the courts or from the Department of Corrections. It's not talking about coming from an individual. So if the courts in their data or if the Department of Corrections in their data have that information, then they have to provide it. If they do not have that information for that individual, then they do not need to provide it.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Fraser, why wouldn't they have that information? If they're a citizen, why wouldn't they have the information, driver's license, or identification number when you need to do so many of the things that we do require, pretty much everything we need to do requires you to have some form of identification. It just seems really...
Mr. Chair, Representative Peppin, I am not familiar with the court's procedures or the Department of Corrections procedures and don't know why they would or would not have this information. We're just asking if they do that they provide it to us.
You represent Tamar. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Fraser, this deals with Section 4 on page 2, guardianship and incompetence. And this may not be addressed directly in this bill, but my question is in the nursing home facility, as a patient ages and perhaps becomes incompetent, is there some means for the nursing home or the medical staff to report, if a patient in the nursing home becomes incompetent to vote in the next coming election?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Szymanski, individuals have the right to vote unless it's specifically revoked by a court. Now, individuals also have to apply for an absentee ballot if they're not planning on going to the polling place. So, if somebody needed assistance and wasn't provided it, then they wouldn't get an absentee ballot.
I think that's enough on that.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Peppin asked my question, so I'm okay. I can hear. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll turn the chair over to Representative Benson.
Any further questions from members of the committee? Seeing none. Representative Simon renews his motion in House File 1053, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and refer to the committee in Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Yes. Representative Murphy? Okay. Representative Winkler, would you mind moving the report for Representative Murphy, House File 0723?
Mr. Chair, is this the committee report for the State Government Division?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee report for the House File. Caught me by
723, it's at the bottom of the first page.
723.
Representative Winkler moves the State Government Finance Division report for House File 723, the first committee in Grossman. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Winkler? You move the...
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 723, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Murphy, you'd like to...
Glenn, if there's a problem with the bill.
Oh.
Why don't you explain what the problem is, and we'll just maybe drop down to the next bill.
Members, in your packet is the, it looks like just a couple pages perhaps from the division report for House File 723. The bill is actually quite thick, so I'm going to make sure that you have a copy of the bill in its entirety before we vote on it. So I'm going to go make sure that happens, and we'll revert back to it shortly.
Well, Representative Murphy, will this latest transfer? The time? We'll have to lay it aside for time so we can get the full copy of the bill. Come back to you.
All right. I'm cooperative.
Thank you. All right, so we'll move on to number 7, House File 0866, Senate File 915. Representative Hosh. President Kahn.
Oh. I move the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 866, Special Committee Endorsement.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Kahn?
I move that Senate File 915, the Second Endorsement, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Tax.
Okay. And then Representative Kahn?
Then I move to delete the language from Senate File 915, Second Engrossment, that's 866, and that 915. And then the next one is I move to delete the language from Senate File 915 and insert the language from House File 866, the Second Committee Engrossment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 866, or what will soon be Senate File 915, I believe, the statewide health insurance school for teachers. It is a different bill from what we've seen in the past and a different bill from the Senate. The main difference is that this legislation offers an opt-out for self-insured plans or self-insured group plans. Since this is the Finance Committee, the pertinent section would be Section 15, which holds on the state's general fund at no cost, and also the state's the insurance trust fund at no cost by allowing $425,000 to be appropriated from the insurance trust fund, but then that being made up through assessments to members. With that said, I think the committee is rather familiar with this bill, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Before we do that, I need to have a vote, I guess, on the House File substitution, right?
Oh, okay.
Right, and the deletion.
The second
motion.
Right. The motion to delete the language from Senate File 915 and insert the language from House File 866.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Okay, now we're ready. Any questions for Representative Hodge? All right. And seeing none, Representative Kahn, remove her motion to delete language in Senate File 915.
The motion.
Oh, the one above?
I'll renew my motion that Senate File 915. You recommend it to pass the second endorsement. Okay. You recommend it to pass and as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Tax.
Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Thank you. And we have another one, 1708. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I move the Healthcare and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1708, First Committee Engrossment.
Representative Huntley moves the Healthcare and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1708, the First Committee Engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1708, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
I understand there's an author's amendment.
And, Mr. Chair, I would offer the author's amendment.
Mr. Hosh, would you like to describe the author's amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The author's amendment makes some changes in the very last section, Section 18, that deals with rate setting for intensive residential treatment centers, and it's at no fiscal cost. Actually, the reason why this bill originally came to the Finance Committee was because of the addition of Section 18. The department figured there'd be a slight cost. We have now modified that with the amendment in Health Finance, and now a few other changes with the section to make sure that there's no cost. The department is here to answer any questions on that section or to clarify its fiscal impact, but that's pretty much all it does is just make a few technical changes.
Any questions or discussion? Representative Samanci.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On to the amendment. The 278 amendment, is that correct?
I believe so.
That's correct.
Okay. On the amendment line 1.3, it says page 23, delete everything after the period. Is that the very first period on the page?
Representative Fox.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the amendment in front of me, but it should be deleting the very last period of Section 18 of the bill. And I'm not sure what engrossment is in front of you. But.
Shepard. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Hosh, it looks to me like the intent was to say page 23, line 23, delete everything after the period.
Yes. It's the very last time. And Mr. Chair, I apologize too. One omission on that amendment. I need on 1.7 the amendment changed July 1st, 2009 to January 1st, of 2010.
All right, let's get this change first. Shepard, was that 1.3 where the change was made?
Yes, Mr. Chair, on 1.3, it should read page 23, line 23, delete everything after this period.
All right. Does everyone have that? Any discussion? Any questions on the amendment? Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we doing both amendments at the same time or just the first amendment?
Well, I guess we have to vote on this change.
We
thought we incorporated into the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move to incorporate that into my amendment.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Hawk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is the department's mental health policy bill. There's three primary areas that it addresses: adult mental health rehabilitation services, technical changes, community health worker supervision standards, and also on children's mental health, including CTSS, or what is referred to as children's therapeutic services and support. It's mainly technical in nature. The department is here to answer any questions. There's some mandate relief provisions that some of our counties would like, and I would appreciate the committee's support.
Any discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my only question is, and I know it's a technical bill, but we also were fresh from doing the HHS bill today on the floor of the House, and this comes afterwards, and it looks like some similar language, so this has all been, it all fits together. I mean, I just want to be sure nothing's in conflict.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer. Although very similar subjects between the omnibus bill and this, I think since this is more technical in nature, we wanted 1708 to move through on its own just in case it won't get caught up in what may be the politics of the last week or so. So that's why you might be seeing this effort.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Huntley refuses his motion. The House files 1708 as amended. The first committee engrossment be recommended to pass place in general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Thank you. Representative Hillstrom. Okay. Representative Morrow.
All right, we'll go back. I don't see this one. Okay. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 796. He recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I also have an author's amendment if you would like me to move that.
Yes, please.
Time. And that is the 276, HDA 276. I would move that amendment to get the bill before you in the form the author preferred.
Thank you. Excuse me. Yeah. Representative Morrow, if you'd like to explain the amendment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Houseman, thank you. The bill allows the Department of Finance to sell bonds to individuals and denominations of $1,000 and above. What the amendment does is it removes the zero coupon form option and changes the minimum denomination to $1,000. Members, by doing this, the fiscal note that you have before you is eliminated. The fiscal note was tied to the zero coupon form that had been allowed in the original bill.
Any questions or discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Representative Moore?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, what this bill does is it allows departments to sell bonds to individuals. This came to me from some construction companies and some labor groups down in my area that were looking for ways to invest in bricks and mortar projects in Minnesota. This bill simply gives the department the authority to do so. It doesn't direct the department to sell these bonds. In previous committees, we've had representatives from the department speak favorably of the bill, having heard from mortgage, from bond brokers and others wishing that we had this option.
Any discussion or questions? Representative Cole?
Chair, either for Representative Morrow or maybe Representative Houseman, has this been through your committee?
Representative Houseman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we heard it and it actually was included in our capital investment bill, which would have been voted on the House floor. I think Senator Langfest doesn't like a lot of policy language in his bills, and this in the Senate is authored by Senator Steve Murphy, and I think they had determined to move it directly to the Senate floor, and so we're doing the same with the House bill. But it was passed, heard in our committee, passed in our committee, and on the floor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, it looks like we deleted Subdivision 5, the blank that's in the bill, as it is. Okay.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow or Representative Houseman, the Subdivision 4, the marketing plan, says the Commissioner shall develop a plan for marketing these bonds. How is it that there's no cost if the department's going to create a marketing plan and presumably market these things? It's going to cost somebody some money.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, you're right that if the department was to decide to go forward, there would be some marketing costs. They weren't quite sure what those marketing costs would be, but I did get some idea that it could be about $10,000 per bond sale exchange for each sale, about $10,000 per bond sale for marketing. But that was an estimate. Not sure how many they'd sell, what time they'd sell them, and the like.
Mr. Chair, one final question. Representative Morrow, I don't think I have any problem with this. I'm just trying to why do this? Is there some kind of issue we're trying to get at, or are we having a hard time selling the bonds that we're issuing now, or is it that we're just hoping to give Minnesotans an opportunity to invest in Minnesota projects?
Morrow or Houseman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, actually, as I mentioned earlier, Commissioner Cardell testified that she had actually had contact from people who were trying to buy these, hoping to buy bonds like this, that bonds like this were offered by other states where individuals could invest directly in projects in their state. She felt this was another option or another tool that the department could use if it felt that the market was sufficient, but that present statute did not allow the department to sell bonds to individuals along these lines.
President Cole.
Representative Schimansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morrow. Reading subdivision 3 there, direct sales permitted. So basically we're cutting the bond brokerage houses out of this process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schimansky, actually, this was permissive language in Subdivision 3 that I went through with the department. The department actually thinks that mostly broker-dealer firms would be selling these offices. The department itself would not be selling directly to individuals.
Okay. Chairman, one more question.
Representative Schimansky.
Would these bonds also then be subject to, brokerage house rating services and so forth so that we know the, what bond rating these bonds would carry?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schimansky, honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not familiar enough with how bonds are rated. Yeah.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I will say that finance department, MMB, came to us with another bill that is included in our bonding bill and for which we have put an effective date for a couple of years just to get us through this difficult economic time. And the department brought that to us precisely because they were concerned that given our current economic situation that they might go to sell bonds the next time and find in fact there was not the market, and that they wanted the opportunity for private sales. So now we just have public, and we added public and private, and that was at the request of MMB, for the current economic period. So that alternative, which local governments do already, is sunset in our bill just to get us through this particular period.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the other questions I had, because it seems I like the idea of Minnesota First. I mean, great name. And but when the money is raised, how is it decided how to use these bond proceeds? Is there a competitive process? If I have somebody in my district who is interested in city or township, something like that, or a project, would they be able to make use of something like this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kipfer, that was one of the conversations I had an opportunity to have with Commissioner Cardell. How would these funds be used? And these funds would be used, my understanding, is to enable states to bond, GO bonds. I believe that there would still be the bonding committee or the capital investment committee process. This would just enhance the authority of the bonding committee or the capital investment committee to bond.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, then Representative Hausman renews her motion and House File 796 as amended. Be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Member.
We go back to Murphy. Hillstrom. Representative Hillstrom. Okay, Representative Hillstrom, your bill is being passed out right now.
And if I could have a copy of the committee engrossment register, that would be helpful to me as well.
Mr. Representative Kahn.
Yes, I move the State Government Finance Division report for House File 354, the first committee engrossment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Kahn.
I move that House File 254, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The housing sector represents 20% of the economy here in Minnesota, and by 2010, it is estimated that Minnesotans will have lost over $70 billion in home values. The Homestead Lender Mediation bill that is before you would require that the homeowners be offered mediation prior to the lender being able to foreclose. The governor's office has requested that we have the counseling that is currently in law be a screen, so homeowners that wanted to go to mediation would first have to go through the counseling, and then they would be permitted to request mediation. We anticipate that there will be a projected 30,000 foreclosures in Minnesota in 2009. And Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions unless you need additional information from me.
Any discussion? Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, I don't want to get too far afield of the finance issues, but Section 8, the good faith requirement. I guess the concern I have as I read through that, and I haven't seen this bill in any of the committees that I serve on, I think this language could be read to require that a lender show up and be willing to modify the loan or be found to not be in good faith. Am I reading that incorrectly? Can you help me understand what it is you're intending to do with the good faith requirement in Section 8 of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cole, actually, no, they don't have to show up and modify, but they would need to come and let us know what options they do have available, what it is that the homeowner actually owes, so that we would at least have a clear picture of where the homeowner is. And in the last committee, at the request of many, they asked us to add a provision that would have a bad faith provision on both sides, and we did amend that on in Representative Kahn's committee earlier today. So there is a creditor's bad faith as well as a debtor's lack of good faith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, is there how are the costs borne for this mediation? If the lender has to retain counsel, or if the homeowner retains counsel, are parties responsible for their own costs? Is somebody picking up the other side's costs? How does that work?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cole, it is not intended for there to need to be attorneys present. And so at this point, if someone decides they want an attorney, they would be footing the bill themselves. We do not have a provision for us to pay the other side attorney fees.
Representative Cole?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hillstrom, I guess I'm just trying to think through, if you're a large mortgage company and you have, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 loans here in the state of Minnesota, and 5% of them are in default or 3% of them or whatever the case may be, we're talking about a fairly large number of mediations that you're going to have a representative at. And presumably there's additional cost there. I'm just trying to understand. It sounds as though there's no provision at all for those costs to be incurred by anybody other than the individual parties. So we're basically going to keep the American rule, unlike what we did with some of the bills on the floor today. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct, Representative Coles, and we did add a provision to permit these to be done over the telephone unless the mediator requests the person show up in person for some reason.
Just for information, there is an individual in the audience who would like to testify. We do not take testimony in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, when testimony was taken in the division, there was testimony but in the division.
Right. Representative Hillstrom, any other questions or discussion?
Please vote yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hillstrom, could you refresh my memory? Which groups oppose your bill in state government, finance, or other committees?
Representative Hillstrom.
They can't testify for themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pepin, Mr. Chair, the community bankers have asked to be exempted out. We have not done that. The credit unions also have asked to be exempted out. We have not done that. The realtors don't want the recording fee. They prefer the funding source that the Senate adopted today. And I can't remember if there was anybody else. I'm sorry?
Representative Seven? Any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kahn removes her motion that House File 354, the first committee in Grotto, to be recommended to pass and be referred to the committee in Ways and Means. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you, members.
All right, should we do this one? Representative Kahn. You have the House File 1219, I believe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move that House File 1219 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right. Would you like to discuss the bill when you have an opportunity?
Well, I'm going to go there. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Why isn't it on here?
Ah.
Okay. But who's gone?
This bill has already passed the committee, the division, ways and the division, the committee, and ways and means as part of the omnibus state government finance bill. We also think that it's probably a good idea because of some objections from the Senate of having the policy items, some policy items in this bill. We think it's a good idea to also send it on its way separately.
Representative Kahn, we just received a amendment.
This amendment will put it
A1.
In the same. I'd like to move the amendment A1, and this amendment delays the effective date. Because the bill doesn't use general fund money, it uses the CGIP group health. People are eligible for the CGIP funding, which is a separate fund, but there is some discussion, which allegedly has enough reserves to cover this. There was some discussion about that the reserves are already accounted for in this year's bargaining session, so we decided to put it off until the next bargaining session.
So Representative Kahn moves the A1 amendment to get it to the bill in
commission?
Sure.
It just moves back the effective date. Moves up the effective date.
Does everyone have a copy of the amendment? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right, Representative Kahn.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move the bill. This is not a radical and different proposition. The state is probably one of the few large employers in the state that do not grant domestic partnerships. There are 200, 300 large corporations that do. The bill was brought, and there are people here who can speak to it. The bill was brought to me by the representatives of IFO from the Minsky faculty, and one of the things that they are coming up to is a competitive disadvantage because of the domestic partnership benefits that are offered in many other states, also offered in the University of Minnesota and at about 7 private colleges in Minnesota. So there's corporations that offer it, include such things as Best Buy, Target, McDonald's, and so forth. It's no longer considered a surprising thing to do. We did hear testimony about the issues of the competitive disadvantages, about people who might make the decisions to go to other places because of this.
Any discussion? Question? Seeing none, Representative Kahn removes her motion. House File 1219 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee in Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Pass.
Thank you.
All right. Does he leave us any with nothing? Bill, no?
The bill is being copied as we speak. I think we'll have to recess for a few minutes.
All right.
The members should remain close. That's the pension bill, and it's fairly thick, but taking a little time to run. So,
all right. We will be in.
Can we have a
turn?
You
want to
do that?
Yeah.
Hey, Representative Murphy, we'd love to hear you talk about it.
I
mean, no sense in wasting time.
Okay.
And we got a couple of...
Thank you, Jim Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment 4A, which is a purely technical amendment, matches up with things that are in the Senate bill. We're trying to pre-conferee with the amendment.
I think maybe we should.
Mr. Chair?
We'll wait until we have the bill before we move the amendment.
Okay. But I just wanted to tell you about it.
You'd like to hear.
Mr. Chair, this is the Finance Committee, so there are 15 articles in the bill, but there are only two articles that have to do with money or finances that change money. And the one is Article 7, which is MNSU-related retirement provisions, would allow MNSU board to establish an early separation incentive program consisting of either cash incentives, employer contributions to the MSRS, post-retirement health savings plan, or a combination of the two. It would not have to be done system-wide. Individual schools could choose to do as much or as little as they wish, depending on how many potential layoffs they're going to have, and it's depending on the age of their faculty. And they would not have to participate if they did not, the campus would not have to participate if they did not want to, and they could if they would. The second article that has to do with finance is Representative Thiessen's PRA provision in the bill, and he can better explain it than I.
Representative Thiessen?
I have really good provision. No, it's we have a funding problem in PRA because one of the reasons, two really big reasons. One, obviously, the stock market had an effect. The second thing is we last year merged the post fund and the active fund together, which created the post fund had a deficit, and so that created a shortfall. So this bill, first of all, this is something we did for the other two statewide funds in recent years, MSRS and PARA, which was to create a step-up of contributions to catch the fund, bring the fund back up to full funding. And that is part of this bill, and that's probably the most significant part of this bill. So we are doing increases in contributions for both the employer and the employee in linked step, which is kind of how we typically do it. The other thing that this bill does is really much down the road more, but it starts the process as well of resolving an inequity between teachers hired before 1989 and teachers hired after 1989 who have different types of pension benefits. And at this point, most of the active teachers have been hired after 1989. They're paying for the benefits a richer, in a sense, benefit set, at least for long-serving teachers on the who were hired before 1989, and this bill starts fixing that problem. I think the most important thing we have to remember about these things is that, and we learned this from Minneapolis teachers issue and a whole lot of other things, the longer you wait to fix these problems, the more expensive they get exponentially. So this bill starts down the path of fixing both of them.
Okay, Representative Coles has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, I truly don't want to sound flip, but the idea of doing the step up in the increased employer contribution in light of the poor performance of the fund, help me understand why we should. I mean, my 401k is in the tank. And my employer isn't able to come to the state, isn't able to come to the taxpayers to increase the employer contribution. I can certainly contribute more myself, but help me understand, can you articulate a policy reason as to why, I mean, based on market performance, we should be increasing the employer contribution to these funds?
The reason is we want to that the state has made a promise to these teachers, and we want to honor that promise, and we also don't, and the longer we wait, you know, we wouldn't have to make the contribution increases now. We could hope that investment performance returns for us, right? But if it doesn't, if it continues to go south, you get into a really bad situation. We can solve this problem much more inexpensively and honor the promise that we've made as a state, and if we start addressing this problem now.
Very cool.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, do you know what the cost of the state cost, the public cost to the step up is?
Mr. Chair, I think it shows your system of what, about $20 million this year, and $20 million in the first year, which is actually the first year of the next biennium, and I think those numbers are right, $40 million in the following year. I don't have the system note in front of me right now.
41.
Yeah,
21 and 41.
Representative Kipmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and no doubt about it. I can see why Representative Coles, it would be nice for all of us if our employers are kicking to our 401ks right now and kind of fill that up. That would be great. But my question pertains, though, to property taxes and the fact that employer usually with the school district, the employer is the school district. So in this particular case, these are funds that used to be funded by the local school district, and now are they being funded by the state as the employer, or is it still the local school district?
We, as a state, I think have always paid for the employer contributions to pensions as a state, and so we increase our, we, in the past what we've done is just increase our state aid to the school district to cover the cost of these pension benefits. So it's always been, it's never been a property tax-based funding source.
I don't know if I should agree with that, but, you know, I think it clears it up, at least for this particular thing, because in the end, you know, taxpayers aren't so distinct as just the state or just the local. We pay as taxpayers, so I think it's the same pocket. But maybe there's a little transfer in between there, but nonetheless, it still does.
It is the taxpayer thing,
yes. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also for Representative Thiessen, did mention that the step up in contribution is fulfilling a promise. Is it written in statute somewhere that we need to do this to give them the step up in their funding?
Mr. Chair, the step up in the funding is not a promise. The promise is actually to pay the pension benefits, and to accomplish that, because of the way the fund, the state of the fund right now, we need to honor that promise. We need to add additional funding to it. And I would note that if the stock market actually does recover and we have some really good years in the next 4 or next 6 years, I guess, there is a provision in here that the contribution will be mediated.
Representative Thiessen, can I gather from that then that this is a defined benefit plan where we're obligated to pay out certain dollars at the point of retirement?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
I have another amendment that we could maybe do, which is kind of standalone in the 10 people's packet. You don't need the bill to kind of do the amendment, so can I just move that amendment?
It's on a different topic, Mr. Chair.
We still do not have a copy of the name.
We have copies of the amendment. Oh. There are two
things we can do. There were, in the report, the thing is labeled 723CR1. Yes.
All right, we'll move the amendment. No. Well, it has been moved, but then we discovered we didn't have copies.
As long as the bill is, with the understanding with everybody, Mr. Chairman, would be that we're not going to move the bill until everybody has a copy of it, but the amendment is freestanding, so if
nobody objects, we can do that in the interest of time.
All right. President Thiessen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment is actually just directing the commission to study what has been done in several other states, which is to look at the possibility of creating what we would call a pension relief fund, but basically a fund that would, we have a number of local funds out there that are not one of the three big state funds. Most of them are closed funds, and at some point we will need to consolidate those funds into the state funds. And based on experience we've had in recent years with some of our local funds, and including a fund that we're not doing anything in this bill with this year, which is the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund, which is in a deep crisis, but there's not an agreement on how to solve that problem. I thought that it would be worthwhile having the fund, the Legislative Commission on Pensions, at least look at some options about how can we think about making sure we have the resources planning ahead so that it's not such a huge impact all at once, to help move these consolidations along when the time comes. And I'd ask members to support. And really, the main reason, one of the other reasons for putting this in the legislation, is because the Pension Commission right now is chaired by the Senate. And so it would be good if the House could be able to direct that chair to actually look at this whole issue over the interim.
So Representative Thiessen has moved the A4 amendment in discussion. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if this amendment were to go on to the bill, would the bill then need to be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Policy because it's creation of a new commission?
No, it's not the creation of a new commission, Mr. Chair. The Legislative Commission on Pension Retirement exists today.
I stand corrected, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion concerning the amendment? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen. I'm interested in making sure that we're doing everything we can up front to try to get some of these plans in a more fiscally sound manner. I'm wondering if you would consider at some point, and I won't make an amendment today, but consider at some point the assessment of whether we should be considering defined contribution plans as we move forward so that we have a greater ability to ensure sound fiscal management within the pension or within the retirement system. Is that something that you'd be willing to look at all?
Thank you.
The Pension Commission looks at that all the time.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question to Representative Thiessen and Representative on the amendment on lines 1.24, 1.26, 1.27, and 2.1. You talk about reports being filed with the chair and ranking member of each of these committees. Who's the ranking member, Representative Thiessen?
Mr. Chair, I didn't exactly draft the language, but the intent is that it would be the minority lead on those committees.
So then Representative then is the ranking minority member. Should that be inserted in those lines?
That's the intent. So people would feel more comfortable with that. I'd be happy to incorporate the word minority on before the word member on line 1.24, 1.26, 1.27, and 2.1.
Is that your intent, sir, Representative?
Yes.
So in 1.24, we read with the chair and the ranking minority member.
And at 1.26, 1.27, and 2.1.
And in 1.26, the ranking minority member. And 2.7, the chair and the ranking minority member.
And at 2.1.
Thank you. Chair and Ranking Minority Member 2.1. Does anyone have questions about those changes? Can you just incorporate that in your amendment?
Yeah, I'd like to incorporate that.
Any other discussion concerning the A4 amendment? Representative Rod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Peterson, I'm sorry I have my back to you when I'm trying to talk to you, but I'm appreciative of the fact that the Pension Commission has looked at defined contribution. What in your view, Representative Peterson, do you think is inhibiting a greater utilization of a defined contribution versus a defined benefit type approach? Is it legislative barriers? Are they negotiation barriers? What are the barriers that you see?
Mr.
Chair, I think it's a really significant change, and we have pensions. It would add complexity to our pension system to make that change. We've made promises under a defined benefit system going forward. I think there's advantage and disadvantage to each system. I think there's a lot of I mean, we have obviously a defined contribution plan for as legislators, although not all legislators do. I think it's a much bigger discussion than we said should take place necessarily in the finance committee tonight.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I wasn't suggesting that take place here tonight, but I do think that as we assess our pension situation going forward, it should be part of our conversation. I guess what I was just trying to gather, I know Representative Peterson has spent a lot of time on these issues and just trying to gather what those significant barriers to moving in that direction are, and it would appear to me that it's more of a legislative inaction or a legislative approach to retirements and pensions, and it seems to me then, if I hear it correctly, that the barrier would be legislative action. And Mr. Chairman, I agree that that's not our discussion here tonight, but I just wanted to maybe put that out on the table for future discussions as well. I think it's important that we start moving in that direction to align ourselves in a much greater fashion with the private sector.
Any discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, now we can move on.
Mr. Chair?
We are still a little short, a couple of copies, I guess. But we can continue.
I got it.
Do you have it memorized for you?
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move adoption of A4 amendment. 4A amendment.
Okay. Representative Murphy moves the dash 4A amendment. Would you like to describe it?
This is the technical amendment that I referred to before that makes it more like the Senate bill that is passing through.
Any discussion of the dash 4A amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, that concludes the Representative's introduction of A6 and my review of Article 7 that includes the financial information that should be brought to your attention.
Any further discussion? Yes. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, I know that this was put on earlier. I'm wondering if we know how much new money is being spent in the bill in the Duluth and the St. Paul teacher plan for the contribution rate hike.
Representative Murphy.
Here anywhere. We passed earlier in state government today.
Representative Peterson, maybe.
Mr. Chair, for the TRA amendment are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
That should be included in the fifth note because that again is a state contribution.
That's part of the 21 and 41. It's on Article 6, you mean?
I don't have it in front of me. I just haven't looked through the bill. But earlier today, I know we passed some language about the Duluth teachers.
Oh, Representative Pond's amendment. This one.
Yeah.
But that's not new money. That is reappropriating money that is in the amortization aid. It's money in the amortization aid pot that is going to be reappropriated reallocated, but it is not new money.
Representative Pepin.
So there's no new money in the Duluth or the St. Paul Teachers Plan?
Yeah, and because of the language, Duluth will be receiving $280,000, and St. Paul. And St. Paul teachers get a reduction, and the firefighters get an increase.
Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and Representative Murphy, does the pension committee have a target in the Ways and Means Committee?
Representative Murphy.
Not at this point. That I've been told, anyway.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, in Article 6, it looks like we're carrying the increases of the adjustment to the general education formula to pay for the employer contribution in the TRA. Is that appropriated in this, or is that going to be carried in the K-12 bill?
Representative Murphy.
The appropriation is in here.
And Mr. Chairman, either for Representative Murphy or for the staff, I'm serving on the K-12 conference committee, and we have the per pupil funding formula is being frozen in fiscal years 10, 11, 12, and 13. So classrooms are going to be getting, at least projected right now, no increases. But we are proposing we're taking limited resources and allocating them to a more generous pension benefit. And I'm just wondering if, and I'll just keep my question to myself. So that's okay. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Representative Murphy, care to respond?
Mr. Chair, I think I know where you were going. I would like to emphasize what Representative Peason said, that the most important thing is to take care of the deficit in the teacher's retirement fund to get it back up at least over 80%. And that is the first amount of money that would come from the increased contributions of the teachers to do that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I guess I have a couple of questions. I don't understand process-wise how we're allocating more money and we're not identifying a funding stream. And I don't, it just, for me, it's about priorities, and I'm just having a difficult time understanding. I respect the fact that we have a deficit. A lot of people, 401ks, have deficits right now. A lot have taken a beating. And it's going to be difficult for me to talk to my constituents and explain why class sizes are going higher, why we're going to see buses getting cut so more elementary school kids are walking to school. We're going to see food service programs being cut. But we do have the money to give more pension benefit increases, and that's there to allocate, to fill up that hole that's in the pension fund. And I don't get it, but you're a nice woman, and I'm not going to take it out on you.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel great. You know, I feel that the sooner that we can address the deficit, the less money it will take to fill it, and the easier it will be to do it. And I really feel that if I had my choice, we would be starting those increased contributions from the employees before 2012.
Representative Murphy, if I may jump in, isn't the issue here that we have defined retirement programs and the private sector has gone away from that, and so that's, whether you like defined retirement programs or not, it requires that the payments be made as promised. It is a contractual.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, but in the reading that I've done since October, as Representative Broad said, that we should be looking at defined contribution plans, and Representative Peason said the commission has been doing that on a regular basis from time to time. The reading I've done since October is that now the private sector is looking at more defined benefit plans now because of what's happened, and people are looking around. But you always have to remember what we've learned on the commission is that it's always a three-legged stool where there's individual contributions, there's the employer contribution, and there's the investment contribution. And if they're even or pretty even or as predicted as we go along, and we have been very, very lucky because in the past, because the investment contributions have been out there bigger than we first anticipated. And right now, they're not. And so we have to address that, and the sooner we can address it when there's a problem, we try to keep those funds so they're not below 80%. When I was here before you last year, I had no idea that within several months we would, I thought it was going to be 3 or 4 years out. And if there was anyone that had to be, any post fund that had to be merged with the active. And yet, within 6 months, all three of our big plans have to be merged. And I sat here saying, I don't think it's going to happen. And lo and behold, here. And I felt, I felt partially responsible. I said, oh my gosh, I told those committees that this was going to be a while, but we wanted to be in place. I'm really glad we were in place to address this right away. But we wouldn't have been able to be this far along had we not taken the action that we did last spring.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy, I think you're a nice lady, too. I hope you don't take my questions in any other way. Section 73 on page 37 of your bill deals with the annual post-retirement adjustments. Representative Murphy, can you talk to me about what the Pension Commission discussed as it decided to authorize a 2.5% increase in the state plans for years after 2000? After January 1, 2010.
President Murphy.
Thank you. It's page 37. It's a 2.5. I think it appears to me, and I'm not a pension expert. I haven't served on the commission, but it appears as though there's a 2.5% COLA for the.
This isn't Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, this isn't anything new. This is the codification of what we did last spring in the pension bill. And the 2.5% is what we used there in that bill.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, was there any discussion given the changed economic situation as to whether that 2.5% still makes sense today? I understand we maybe did something before, and I'm not saying that it's the wrong thing to do. I'd like to get a 2.5%. I would have liked to have gotten a 2.5% increase in my salary, but my wage was frozen, and I'm not saying we shouldn't do this. I'm just wondering if there was any discussion about that.
Yes,
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, there was quite a bit of discussion about that, but that. One of the basic principles that we have is that there should be, we should be paying as much as possible the cost of living increase.
Representative Cole?
Final question, Representative Murphy. Is there any kind of state cost associated with this 2.5% increase? Is there any way that we track on a spreadsheet somewhere a state impact to that, or is that just, as you said, the fund balance being paid out, and we're making a decision as to what we're going to pay out from the investment fund.
Representative Murphy.
From year to year, it's not passed. Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, from year to year, it's not on a spreadsheet, but it is over the period of amortization, the 20 years or 40 years or whatever years we use on a particular for a particular plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I looked at the fiscal note and I couldn't find it, so maybe there isn't one, but this Article 10, this is the creation of the voluntary statewide lump sum volunteer firefighter retirement plan. Does that have a fiscal impact on the state?
No.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kim, no, it doesn't.
Mr.
Representative Kim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, to you, point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chair, what is the motion on this bill?
Motion call.
Mr. Chairman, we need to make the motion.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
We're waiting for copies, Representative Kim. So, as soon as we're done with the discussion, we need to move the division report and then make a motion of the bill as amended.
Okay.
We began to do it and we discovered we did not have sufficient copies.
One final question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vipkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then this would be to Chair Carlson and to the author of the bill, Representative Murphy. Article 10, Section 12 creates a new advisory board. It's the Voluntary Statewide Lump Sum Volunteer Firefighter Retirement Plan Advisory Board. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, has this bill been heard in the Committee on State Gov? Because I do believe by Rule 4.13 that it needs to be heard in that committee. Has this bill been heard in that committee?
In
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Answers yes.
Okay.
Thank that you, was Mr. the first stop, Mr. Chair. It was a month ago, but...
It must have been a long time ago.
Representative Rod.
And Mr. Chair...
Yes, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kim, this has been in the discussion stage for at least 5 years, and then this working group was finally formed, and this is the recommendations of that working group. And it was, there was unanimity in agreement of what it was.
Representative Kinzer, to you then.
Any further discussion? We're going to have to make some motions now. I heard somebody say, Representative Murphy.
I move House File 723, the first committee encroachment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Yeah, we have to do a couple of things before, because the bill wasn't technically before us. We need to move the division report and vote on that, and then we're going to have to move the bill, and those two amendments that we put on, technically the bill wasn't before us, so we're going to have to put those two amendments on a second time, and then we'll take that motion that you just made, Representative Murphy. So, Representative Thun.
Okay, I move the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 723, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Now, Representative Murphy, your motion on the bill, and then we'll take those two amendments that we talked about and adopted earlier again. So, Representative Murphy, you want to make your motion?
I move House File 723, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that motion is before us. Can I have a copy of those 2 minutes? And we'll have to vote again on the A4 amendment. That was Representative Thiessen's amendment. We would be incorporating the changes there where a minority member and so on was put in. So it would be the way we adopted it. So the chair moves, or Representative Thiessen moves the amendment in A4. Any further discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Then we have Representative Murphy's A4 amendment.
No, 4A.
Or 4A amendment, yes. By Representative Murphy. So Representative Murphy moves the 4A amendment. Any further discussion on that amendment?
Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Murphy renews her motion then that House File 723, the first committee engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. That concludes everything, right? So that concludes business now. Members, we may have other bills that are referred to the committee from divisions or other places. So watch for your emails about future meetings. And with that, thank you, everyone, and meeting adjourned.